Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Quantum Intellectual Property 2020 full year results call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question and answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone. Please be advised that today's call is being recorded, and I'd like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Managing Director and CEO, Mr. Craig Dower. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Kevin, and good morning, everybody. As Kevin said, my name is Craig Dower, and I'm the CEO and Managing Director of Quantum Intellectual Property. I'm joined today by our Chief Financial Officer, Martin Cleaver. Thank you all for joining us for this presentation of our full-year results from FY20. If we could go to the next slide, please, Kevin. Rebecca, there we are, thank you. So Martin and I will take turns of going through the details of our deck, which is shared on the webcast here and is also available via the ASX website. Our presentation today will cover business and financial highlights, a COVID-19 update, obviously our detailed financial results, a market and business overview, a summary of our business priorities looking forward, and then a quick update on capital management and outlook. Next slide. If we could go to slide 5, please, on business highlights. Thank you. Before we dive into the detail of our results, I want to share some context of what we've been doing for the past 6 or 7 months. I started as CEO in January this year. I'm pleased to say that it was a very smooth transition between Leon Allen, our founding CEO, and I. Leon and I worked together through that process, and then Leon took a break between March and June, and pleased to say he's recently rejoined us as a non-executive director. Next week will mark the 4th anniversary of Quantum as a listed company. That, coupled with the global COVID pandemic, which I'll come to in a moment, has prompted us to do a review and refinement of our group strategy. It's more about evolution than revolution, and I'll come to some of the detail further in the deck. Of course, in a business such as ours, the primary focus continues to be on our people. We're continuing to invest in our people on a number of fronts, which I'll also talk about further on. As I've mentioned to investors in past presentations, much of my background has been in IT professional services and helping to lead companies through change. We believe that there's a substantial opportunity to drive greater client service and increase competitive advantage through targeted investments in technology, and we've now started that program of work. Again, I'll cover that in some detail further on. We're also continuing to look for acquisition opportunities, both in Australia and also internationally, with a primary focus on Asia. We're building a pipeline of potential opportunities. We recently appointed a head of mergers and acquisitions, a new role for the group, to help accelerate that. Like every business, we've managed our way through the disruption of COVID over the past 6 months or so. Our primary focus during that time has been on the health, safety, and well-being of our people. I want to thank all of our people for the extraordinary contribution they've made during a massively disruptive period over these past months. I'm pleased to say that we haven't missed a beat despite the disruption, and that is down to the amazing teamwork of all of our people. Over the past year or so, we've been making targeted investments in the continued long-term success of the Quantum Group of companies. These have included a new principal remuneration scheme with an incentive component based on performance. We've continued to invest in the careers of our people with 21 professional promotions, a large number of which were women, as part of our continued focus on diversity and inclusion. We have also added several senior executive roles aimed at helping us drive growth and transformation. Kylie Sprott as Chief Transformation Officer, Morgan Sloper as Head of M&A and Risk, as I just mentioned, and Susan De Medici as Head of Organisational Change. Each of these senior leaders has more than 20 years of experience in driving growth and transformation, and we feel fortunate to have them on our team. We also announced in May the acquisition of Cotton's Intellectual Property, and we're thrilled to have them join the Quantum team. If we could please move to the next slide. This slide shows a snapshot of our results across the group. We'll go into detail in each of these areas further on, but at a glance, as you can see, we had a very strong performance from our patent teams, with revenues up 7.3% overall and patent applications up 3.1%, representing 15% growth over the past 3 years. We had a stronger than market performance in Australia, with growth in market share and continued strong growth in Asia, with Singapore patent applications up almost 26%. In trademarks, our service fees were up, whilst filings overall were flat. Filings were down in Australia, 5.5% if you look at the whole of the market, including self-filers, or slightly up if focused on the top 50 firms, which better represents our market sector. Our legal team delivered a strong result against a record year last year, and legal services continue to be delivered in a modified and virtual environment. We go to the next slide. This slide is showing the breakdown of our business by service line. As you can see, patents and advisory work comprised 68% of our total revenue, and service fees in FY20 were up 7.3% against the prior period. This is a very strong result for our patents teams. Patent applications across the group were up 3.1%, reaching a new level for the group. Trademarks make up 18% of our revenue, and service fees in FY20 were up slightly year on year against a backdrop of a declining market. DCC retains the leading position in the Australian market for trademarks. Legal and litigation services make up the remaining 14% of our business overall. As we said in earlier presentations, we had a record year in FY19 in our legal services business, with a number of very large matters underway at the time. FY20 service fees are down 3.8% against that, but this was still a very strong performance by our legal services team. If we can move to the next slide, please. Martin will cover our financials in detail, so I'll skip very quickly through this. At a high level, we delivered a very strong result for the year. Total revenue was $116.6 million, up 3.9%. Service charges were $90.3 million, up 4.4%. Net revenue was $94 million, up 4.1%. Operating expenses were $71 million, up 5.8%. due to some key investments we are making, which we'll touch on later in the presentation. EBITDA before FX was $23 million, down 0.9%, and EBITDA after FX was $22.2 million, down 7.5%, with some FX headwinds in the second half. EBITDA margin on service charges revenue was 24.6%. Net profit after tax was $14 million. Operating cash flow was $15.4 million. We're paying a final dividend of 3.8 cents per share, which is 100% franked, resulting in a total FY20 dividend of 7.1 cents. The net debt sits at 17.4 million, and Martin will expand upon this in his update. If we could go to slide 10, please. Before we get into the full financial update, I want to spend just a couple of minutes outlining how we're seeing COVID-19, both in a broader industry context and then in terms of our own business. Clearly, we are in a very challenging period in history with a highly uncertain global environment in relation to health and the economic implications of the pandemic. Looking at drivers within the IP industry, our industry ebbs and flows around global R&D sentiment. That moves up and down, but usually not sharply. And the general long-term trend is upwards. R&D budgets tend not to be the first in line for cuts during an economic downturn. The potential impact of COVID is likely to vary across a number of areas, jurisdictions, countries, maybe even states and provinces, clearly industry sectors, companies within sectors, and the strength of individual balance sheets will also play a role. There are greater risks in some sectors, such as travel and tourism. but also potentially significant medium-term opportunities in sectors such as biotech, pharma, technology, and online retail. The importance of IP protection to clients and the relatively low expenditure to maintain IP suggests that IP will continue to be an ongoing area of investment, which is historically the case. In our anecdotal discussions across the IP ecosystem, IP agencies around the network or IP national offices are broadly contemplating a potential circa 5% decline in filings and revenues for FY21. Obviously, volatility will continue until business confidence resumes, which is likely to be post the general release of an effective vaccine. On how Quantum has responded, I'm pleased to say that our team is managing through this very well. We've had our share of challenges, like every business, but we've worked through them as a team. We think we're well positioned to manage through a number of potential COVID scenarios, and we've modelled these as well as our responses. We believe that our business model remains resilient, with a diverse portfolio of services and clients, and a mix of local and international clients with very limited key client exposure. Our brands continue to be amongst the most respected in the market, as is shown through our growth in revenues and market share over the past few years, along with our retention rate of IP professionals. We have low debt levels, a strong balance sheet, and strong operating cash flows. Our primary focus during COVID-19 has been on the health, safety, and well-being of our people, all of whom have responded incredibly to the challenges posed over the past few months. We very quickly mobilised, like lots of companies, in mid to late March to enable all of our people to work from home. It was a frantically busy period, but we didn't miss a beat in terms of teamwork and client servicing. In this uncertain environment, we'll continue to manage costs prudently. However, we also think this is a time for targeted and strategic investment. We don't envisage ever going back to the way things were. We are using this as an opportunity to reimagine our business in a post-COVID world. We see potential opportunities coming out of this, and we're planning to capture those where we can. That said, we will continue to be prudent and cautious, and I'll talk about that a bit further on. I'm now going to hand over to Martin, who will take us through our financial results in detail.
Thanks, Craig. Good morning, everyone. I'll just wait till the slide comes up. Next slide. Thanks. Slide 12 shows the statutory and underlying profit and loss statement for the year. To help with comparing years, we've shown two columns of adjustments, one for the one-off non-recurring items and one to show the impact of the AASB 16 lease adjustments. In summary, we have a statutory EBITDA of $22.6 million compared to the prior year of $19.9 million. Adjusting for the significant one-off items, the underlying EBITDA before the AASB 16 adjustments is $27.1 million after FX. Once we adjust for the AASB 16 items, the underlying EBITDA result after FX is $22.2 million against a prior year result of $24 million. As we've mentioned, service charge revenue grew by 4.4%, which was on the back of a 13% growth in the prior year. The patent business saw further revenue growth and a 5.8% in the current year, following 10% growth the year before, although the level of growth did flatten out in the second half of the year. The trademark business had a strong second half of the year to produce year-on-year growth of 1.5%, a good result in a softer market. Its revenue in half two grew 7.1% over the first half. The legal business revenues remained strong, being only $0.5 million lower than the record result in FY19. The Asia business, incorporating Advanced Fidelis in Malaysia as well as our Singapore businesses, had service charge growth of 19% and now represents 7% of the group's revenue. Filings in Asia continue to grow, which is a positive indicator for future prosecution work. The revenue result benefited from a lower Australian dollar against the US dollar, with approximately 50% of our total service charges billed in USD. This was offset to some extent by the strengthening Australian dollar in the second half. You'll note from the FX line that there was a $0.8 million FX loss all in the second half. This impact caused a year-on-year negative impact of $1.6 million on EBITDA. Looking at costs, underlying operating expenses of $71 million were 5.8% higher than PCP. We've continued to invest in our people, and our staff costs of $53 million represented an increase of 8.8% for the year. As we noted at the half year, we incurred additional costs relating to the realignment of the vendor principal salaries back to market levels, and this group has recommitted for a further 2 years to August 21. We also introduced a new short-term incentive scheme. As we've also mentioned, corporate costs have increased as we invest in our people to progress our key strategic goals, particularly in transformation and M&A. Other expenses of $11.1 million are lower than PCP, due mainly to reduced travel and marketing spend as a result of the COVID pandemic. If we could move to the next slide, please. Slide 13 shows the cash flow characteristics of the business. The cash from operating activities was $15.1 million above the prior year of $14.6 million. Although we note, however, that due to the impact of AASB 16, $4.9 million of the cash outlay for rental lease payments is now reclassified as financing activities. The prior year had a high level of income tax payments, and these have now returned to normal levels. This year also includes the final earn-out payment for the acquisition of the AFIP business in Malaysia, $2.8 million. Capital expenditure outlays of $1.2 million are lower than the prior year and mainly relate to investments in our IT infrastructure, including costs to support remote working capabilities. This level of expenditure will likely be replaced by investment in the transformation program going forward. $2.7 million of spend on investments relates to the upfront cash payment as part of the Cotter's acquisition. The strong cash conversion supports a dividend payout at the top end of the range at 90% of NPATA. Can we move to the next slide? Thank you. This slide shows the group's balance sheet. Remains strong and provides the capacity for future growth. The major movements from the prior year relate to the impact of the new accounting standard AASB 16 leases, which have had the impact of grossing up the assets and the liabilities. The net debt is at $17.4 million and includes an increased cash balance of $6.2 million, and that is at a gearing level of 19.6%. We note that banking covenants continue to be well within requirements and cash conversion remains higher. The debtor book remains of high quality with low levels of debt write-offs and provisions. There has been no indication to date of any bad debt issues due to the COVID pandemic, and the debtor days collection result is in line with the prior year. We move to the next slide, thank you. Finally, slide 15 contains the statutory underlying profit reconciliation. This shows the one-off items that have been added back to the statutory EBITDA of $22.6 million to arrive at the underlying EBITDA of $22.2 million. The key items are the AFIP earn-out payments treated as an expense for accounting purposes of $1.9 million, new business establishment costs representing the investment in our effervescent startup business, which was $300,000 all incurred in the first half, external business acquisition costs of $1.4 million, and the one-off retention payments to the vendor principals. You recall from the first half that this was a cash outlay of $1.3 million, but is being brought to account over the 2 years for accounting purposes. For ease of comparison purposes, we've also noted the impact of the AASB 16 adjustments. I'll now hand back to Craig to cover the market and business overview.
Thanks, Martin. And if we could move directly on to slide 17, please. This next section provides an update on the various segments of our business. I'll cover them fairly quickly, focusing on the highlights. First is revenue by service lines. You can see here the breakdown between patents, trademarks, and legal services, and the corresponding growth over the past several years. As stated earlier, total revenue for the year was up 3.9%, patent revenues were up 5.8%, trademarks were broadly flat, whilst legal services were down 3.8% against a record prior year. We had a stronger second half in FY20 than we did in FY19, which is a huge credit to our team given the disruption of COVID and the dramatic shift in workplaces and practices over the past 6 months. We can move to slide 18 on patents. As you'll see, our patent business is stronger than ever across all jurisdictions, with total group patents up 3.1%. Australian patents were up 0.9% versus a market decline of 0.6%. Asian patents were up almost 26% to our highest recorded level. PCT applications were up 11%. The rest of the world applications declined slightly, around 3%. As you can see, the breakdown of patents there, Australian patent applications, 60% of the group, rest of the world, 23%, Asia, 13%, and PCT, 4%. And as always, it's worth noting that patent applications are a lead indicator for future period patent service charges. Revenues derived from patent applications typically constitute about 10% of Quantum's annual patent service charges revenue. So it's a portion of the overall revenue stream, and a lot of things happen after that. On slide 19, we could move to that, please. This just shows the continued strength of our Australian patent teams with above market growth and a further increase in market share. Leon in the past has referred to this as the engine room of our business, and we're very pleased with the continued growth and progress of our Australian patent teams. As you can see, overall market share has grown over the last several years from under 14% to around 14.2%. Next slide, please. Patents in Asia, as you can see, we continue to deliver strong growth in Asia with total patents growth of 25.9%. Advanced Fidelis had a very strong year with growth of 26.9%, despite a highly restrictive lockdown period due to COVID-19, which impacted the June quarter. Our Singapore filings were up over 30%, and our Asian patent business has grown 150% over the past 3 years, albeit from a small base. Asian patent revenues are now approaching 7% of total revenue, and we expect this to continue to grow. We continue to look at opportunities for further growth in Asia. We're very pleased with the progress that our team in Asia is making so far. We can go to the next slide, please. Group trademark filings were stable year on year. Group Australian trademark filings, which represent 46% of the total, declined by 5.5% relative to an overall market 0.7% increase, although that total market includes self-filers, which is not a segment that we pursue. And DCC retained the number one market share position in an overall flat Australian market. We had lower group Asian filings, representing 18% of the full-year total, that were down 12%, in large part associated with the Malaysian COVID business restrictions in the second half of 2020. This has bounced back over the past month or so as restrictions in Malaysia have started to ease. And you can see our New Zealand trademark filings increased substantially by 23.7% and now represent 10% of the group total. If we can go to the next slide, please. This slide simply shows DCC's performance relative to the top 10 firms in the Australian market. As you can see, DCC remains the clear market leader and is holding its position stronger than most firms. Again, we'll go to the next slide. As we said at the half year, our legal services team had a record year in FY19. We expected a downturn in FY20, but this remains a strong result, and our legal team continues to be very busy. COVID has certainly thrown up some challenges for the legal sector, but our teams continue to deliver great service in very changed circumstances, with most courts now moving to virtual formats. But that covers this section. If we can now move to slide 25 on business priorities. I'll spend a few minutes talking about the way ahead and what we are focusing our attention on. Firstly, not surprisingly, we are absolutely focused on our most important asset, our people. This has always been a key area of focus. We're a people business. However, we are continuing to evolve where and how we invest in our people, and I'll touch on that in a moment. Delivering outstanding client service is at the heart of all of the businesses within the Quantum Group. We are a high-touch business focusing on excellence in all that we do. We provide a broad portfolio of services across patents, trademarks, legal services, and advisory, and we're continuing to evolve our service offerings around the central core of intellectual property and innovation. As a listed company, we're committed to delivering great value to our shareholders. Over the next several years, we'll be investing to drive even greater value through a business transformation program, which I'll come to in a moment. If we could go to the next slide, please. Next slide talks about people and culture. As I've stated already, continually investing in our people and culture is at the heart of all that we do. We want to attract and retain the very best people in our industry, and we're tackling that on many fronts, as you can see here. This is a busy slide, and I won't go through every element of it, but in the past several months, especially in places where we've had quite stringent COVID restrictions, such as Singapore, Malaysia, and now the secondary lockdown in Victoria, our people have experienced a number of challenges. We've worked together across the whole of the group to respond to this. This has included an increased focus on well-being through a number of different avenues, resilience training, meditation practices, external resilience presenters, mental health seminars, as well as physical health initiatives such as yoga sessions, nutrition seminars, and presentations regarding sleep effectiveness and so on. We've deliberately taken a holistic approach to this. The lack of separation between home and work, as we've all experienced, has created challenges for all of us. And our aim has been to help all of our people, including our senior leadership team, to develop new skills and approaches in dealing with this new way of working. We've extended our employee assistance program to make it available to all direct family members. We've implemented an outreach program as part of our employee assistance program to cater for those people who need specific support. We've implemented a paid pandemic leave scheme for people in secondary lockdown in Victoria who have specific caring responsibilities, be that young children, elderly parents, or people with special needs. We've implemented a new learning and development platform, which will be at the core of our investments in learning and development over the next several years, and will help us to modernise how we provide continuous and contemporary learning to all of our people. Of course, we've continued with all of the usual elements of focus, rewards and remuneration, learning and development, and diversity and inclusion, and we continue to refine and develop our investments in these areas as well. I'm pleased to say that we did 27 promotions recently, and we continue to focus on diversity in all aspects across the group. We are confident that the work we are doing in this area will continue to position us as the best place to work for IP professionals, with a unique and progressive culture at the heart of all that we do. If we could go to the next slide, please. I want to talk a bit about emerging from COVID. Like many businesses, we've learned a lot over the past several months. We've learned that we can move very quickly and effectively when needed. We've learned the power of the group in driving coordinated change, and we've learned a lot from listening to our people and our clients. We're seeing the challenges posed by COVID in a global context as an opportunity to reimagine and improve the way that we do things across all parts of our business. Our team has done an outstanding job in managing through the first phase, as I've said. We're now well advanced on developing our plans in this second phase. we're examining much of what we do and asking, how can we do this even better? We're thinking very big picture about this, and we're engaging our people and our clients in the process. As I said earlier, we don't envisage simply going back to the way things were before COVID. We're focused on understanding what opportunities COVID presents for us, for our people, for our clients, and for the industry. We can't control the pandemic, but we can control how we respond to it. And we plan to invest on a number of fronts. Firstly, our people, in terms of ensuring that we have the skills required for an increasingly digital future, and looking at the ways we can work without all of our people being in an office every day, being able to work from anywhere, anytime, on any device, and be able to collaborate securely and effectively with team members and clients. Secondly, our technology, to ensure that we have best-in-class systems fully based in the cloud and are able to be interconnected through open API sets. And finally, our clients, through greater connectivity and collaboration and an ability to deliver greater value through increased innovation, a continued focus on excellence, and a broad portfolio of service offerings. Coincidentally, we think all of this will deliver great outcomes for our shareholders as well. If you could go to the next slide, please. I talked about business transformation. Over the past several months, we've been developing our overall business transformation plan, which contains five elements: people, technology, clients, business processes, and growth and scale. We plan to roll this program out over the next 2 to 3 years. The first phase around core infrastructure is already underway. Our high-level investment estimates are $8 to $10 million in total capitalized spend over the next 2 to 3 years, $4 million to $6 million per annum of recurring benefits. The benefits will start to flow in FY22, ramping up to year three with payback within 2 to 3 years. Those benefits will be substantial. They'll include increased productivity, increased revenue, cost savings and efficiency, deeper client collaboration, increased competitive advantage through innovation, an ability to quickly integrate acquisitions and accelerate to greater value, and then overall increase EBITDA margins and earnings per share. Our emphasis will continue to be on supporting and developing our people, developing future skills, investing in leadership development and the career development of all of our people. As I said earlier, this will be underpinned by investing in best-in-class technology with full migration to cloud-based platforms with open API sets. We've developed a high-level investment case, and we're now getting on with detailed implementation planning, and we'll look forward to providing an update at the AGM. Moving on to the final slides, you can go to slide 30, please. On dividend and outlook, so on capital management, we continue to have strong cash flows across the group. Our dividend policy has been to pay between 70% to 90% of NPATA. We paid an interim dividend of 3.3 cents in March, which was at 88% of NPATA. The board has determined a second half dividend of 3.8 cents to be paid, which is at 90% of NPATA at the top of our range. This produces a full year dividend of 7.1 cents, a highly attractive yield. We want to thank all of our shareholders for their continued support. We don't plan on providing guidance for FY21 in this volatile environment. As stated earlier, the IP sector does remain relatively stable, although the global business environment remains somewhat volatile. We'll keep investors appraised of broader business conditions and any potential impact on the IP sector, and our next update will be at our AGM in November. We can go to the final slide, just for a quick summary, 31. And firstly, I want to thank again all of our people for their outstanding contribution and resilience during what's been a very challenging period for all of us. This has been a very strong performance, especially in patents and trademarks. We've delivered continued growth in revenue and market share. We've also delivered continued strong cash flows, resulting in an attractive dividend. Whilst we continue to be prudent and cautious, we do see a degree of industry and business resilience around intellectual property, albeit, as I've said before, in a volatile environment. And again, as I've said a number of times, we continue to look for strategically and financially appropriate acquisition opportunities. We're investing for the future. We're moving ahead with transformation and our technology modernisation program. We expect this to be a positive for all of our stakeholders, our people, our clients, our shareholders, and the communities in which we operate. But thank you for your time. At this point, I'll hand back to our moderator and throw the session open to questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound hash key. Please note, there might be a slight pause as questions queue. Once again, it is star 1 and wait for your name to be announced. Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, it is star 1 and wait for your name to be announced. Thank you. Our next telephone question is from Sam Haddad from Bell Potter Securities. Please ask your question.
Hi, Craig. Hi, Martin.
Hey, Sam.
Hey, Sam.
I understand that it's difficult to give an outlook statement. Just in terms of trends you've seen over, you know, through the since, you know, April, May, June, as we head into July and August, what are you seeing in terms of filings across the market and in your business?
I think we've seen a slight drop in filings in Q4, Sam. It varies a little bit, as I said, by sector and by jurisdiction. Malaysia obviously had a very sudden lockdown and a total lockdown in sort of late March, which had a big impact there. It's kind of V-shaped. They've eased their restrictions and they're bouncing back. You know, we've got a challenging situation in Victoria at present. It's hard to tell what impact that's having right now in terms of filings and so on. But whilst there's been a slight drop in filings, our activity levels have tended to continue to stay very high. Our people are extremely busy, as busy, if not busier, than they've ever been. Some of that is COVID productivity related. I think, as we've all experienced, it is different working from home. You get the benefits of not having commute time, but you're sitting on Teams or Zoom calls all day. So we're not discerning any sort of really clear trends at this stage, Sam. It's, as we're seeing, as you said, and you've seen the numbers around sort of broader filings slightly dropping off in Q4. But again, as I said, our activity levels continue to stay high.
So you're not seeing a stabilisation in July, August at this point? It's too early to say.
I think it's too early to say. It's, you know, these are, sort of, as we've always said in previous presentations, you can't take one quarter or one half in normal circumstances as being an indicator of the long term. So numbers will bounce around a little bit. I think, you know, when we get to the AGM in November, we might have a different view around what we're seeing by way of trends, but it's hard to spot any definite trends at this point in time. Martin, is there anything you want to add to that?
Sorry. No, I think that's right, Sam. I mean, July was in line sort of with July last year, so we're not seeing any major drop or any major increase. And I think, you know, we called out in the presentation that, you know, we'd seen a bit of a flattening of the patents growth in the second half, but still, you know, no drop off or, you know, any signs of a decrease. So we can only, yeah, take it each month as we go at the moment, but everything, you know, there's been, as Craig mentioned, no decrease in people's activity and utilisation.
Okay, that's encouraging. Just in terms of acquisition opportunities into Asia, because Asia's been a key growth ambition for Quantum for some time. What's the progress there? How do you continue that given flight restrictions and so forth?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I guess we're all making it up as we go in the sense of how you respond to the inability to travel. We've got a pipeline of organisations that we've been talking to for quite some time in Asia, and we're continuing to have dialogue with a number of those. You know, we're staying close to that. We're continuing to look at developing the pipeline. We are making some progress. There's nothing sort of imminent that we're about to announce in that regard. But it is, we do have a pipeline of opportunities, and we're continuing to add to that pipeline as well. As I said, sort of in the start of my presentation, we hired a head of M&A, Morgan Sloper, who joined us in May. Morgan's sort of well known to us and was involved with us in a consulting capacity some time ago when we acquired the Advanced Adelis business. And so Morgan's full-time job now is to help us work across the business and look at opportunities to put into the pipeline. So I think that is a very significant and positive step forward for us, to have somebody waking up every day whose sole job it is in life is to be building the acquisition pipeline. And that's, he's hit the ground running. He joined us in May, and he's making good progress.
So where is he based?
He's based at home in Sydney at present. Morgan has the unique experience of having joined us and not being able to visit any of our offices yet, but he's, he's working full-time from Sydney, and as I said, he's hit the ground running. These things are difficult to talk about in the specific, of course, because they're obviously highly confidential until you get to a point where they're not and they're announceable. But
I'm just wondering
we
if you
have
can
a number
complete,
of things.
so I'm just wondering if you can complete on those acquisitions given given restrictions in place with travel and so forth, where we stand today.
Well, I think in every case, the organizations that we're talking to, we've known for a very long time. And so it's not about building new relationships from scratch. And they're well known to us. And we've already been through a filtering process of types of organizations by size, by culture, by jurisdiction, by experience set, and so on. And so everybody that we're talking to is well known to us. I think that takes the risk of doing something in an environment where you can't travel away to a large degree. But as I said, we're working through this together. We'll see how we go as we work our way through. I think we're still approaching this with an open mindset that if we can get to a point of closure, that we can do this, even if we can't travel, but we'll just have to see how that goes.
And just in terms of the transformation initiatives that you've highlighted on slide 28, like this, in terms of the profile of that, of those benefits being realised, can you just sort of give some colour as to how what we should expect in terms of, is it going to be back-end weighted? What's it looking like?
It'll be largely back-end weighted. The $6 million per annum will come sort of, year three-ish, where we'll start to see intangible benefits flowing through immediately in year one just by having a sort of tighter set of systems and operations in place. But I would expect to see returns in the first year of being fairly modest, around $1 million or thereabouts, and then a fairly stepped ramp up to year three.
And
the costs are obviously front end loaded, and we would look to capitalize most of that cost as well. We are working through the more detailed implementation plans. We've done the high level scenarios, which is where we've gotten to on the ranges. We'd like to tighten those ranges and those timeframes over time and share that with investors, but that requires detailed implementation plans rather than just the high level scenarios. But we are starting that work.
Right. So this is now in progress, and these benefits should start to flow in beginning next year and really ramping up over two 3 years. You're saying?
Yeah, I'd say the beginning of next calendar year. We'll start to see some of the benefits starting to flow. It's really the next few months are around detailed implementation planning and getting started. We've started some of the work on core infrastructure. COVID gave us an opportunity to do some things in a slightly accelerated fashion around provision of new sort of user devices, laptops, etc. We've done a bunch of work around cloud migration in the Office 365 space and all that sort of stuff, all sort of basic core infrastructure stuff, the things that you need to have in place as foundation blocks. We hope to have those all done by the end of this calendar year. And in that time, the detailed implementation planning around some of the other core applications areas will be completed. And we'd be looking to start that sometime in calendar year 2021.
Okay, that's all the questions I had. Thanks for your time.
Great. Thanks, Sam.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Thank you. Just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, it is star one. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, it is star one.
Sounds like there are no more questions, Kevin.
We're just gathering the details now, just double checking. Just one moment.
Okay, it's fine. We'll take our time.
Okay, we have our next question from Neil Hawker from Cottage Investments. Please ask your question.
I see the costs are going up at a time when the economy is going downhill. I see the staff costs are going up 9%, and there's a large, what do you call investment, of 8 to 10 million. And what I'd like to know is, this is a great risk to the shareholders because you know, we're seeing a declining return. You mentioned an attractive yield of 7%, but that's based on a share price that's 50% below what it originally was. So my concern is what you're doing about controlling your costs. I think your costs are out of control. That's my question. What are you going to do about it?
Okay, thanks, Neil. I wouldn't think our costs are out of control. We've made specific investments in principal salaries over the last couple of years. There's sort of realignment to market around that, and that's been a large part of the cost increases. We've added to the corporate costs to get on with doing some of the things that we said we were going to do a few years ago that we haven't clearly made the progress in that we would have liked. Around technology transformation and around growth in Asia. And so that's the nature of those investments. It's really in those two areas. And on the technology front, I think the risk is greater in not moving ahead. In today's world, investing in digital platforms and being able to innovate with clients is absolutely critical. And I think there's a distinctive market opportunity there and a competitive advantage opportunity for us as well. So that doesn't quite answer your questions. We're being very prudent in terms of operating costs. As you will have seen, travel and expenses obviously in the last 6 months have dropped dramatically because of COVID, but we are being very prudent around discretionary expenditure. And we see a difference between those two categories. But clearly, we're making investments in our people and our capability in order to grow.
There are a number of further questions at this time. I would like to hand the call back to today's presenters for closing remarks. Please continue.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Sorry, I was just on mute for a second there. And thank you all for your time. We have a number of meetings scheduled with investors over the next several days and look forward to speaking with you all. Thank you for your time and thank you for your support.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the call for today. Thank you for all participating. You may all disconnect. Goodbye.